It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to a new week of Declare Your Independence. Of me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the farm. You know, now it's a, you know, we get our farm. And Butler and Jane Schaefer are in town here in Phoenix for some personal business, and we wanted to have Butler come on and, hey, we'll just come over and have lunch and be chilling and everything. Well, you know, we've had, I wish we could record all the conversations that we have because it's such good information, but we're going to try and bring it all home for you. But I want to make sure that we start off with the article that prompted me to call Butler and ask him to come on. Now, he did this just last week, and it was published on Lou Rockwell, The New Geometry and the New Math. And he has another one that just came out a couple days ago, is What Does History Prove? And we'll talk about that too, I'm sure. But the main thing is that Butler has been a big influence on me and, of course, Mark Victor. And he may be joining us here in about an hour. He's making time out of his busy criminal defense lawyer day to come visit with us. And it basically has been the same rhetoric, I guess, that Butler has been espousing over the years, is that, you know, you're not going to have in the future this pyramid structure, top down, we rule you. It just, because of technology and awareness of people and the ability to share information faster, more quickly, more accurately, that they're not going, we're not going to accept it from they, them, those that won't leave us alone. We are now in a situation to where everything in our life is going to be more local, all the way down to the individual control of our own lives. Butler, help me out with this. How close am I?
Good. That's not bad. I'm enjoying listening to it.
Grab your bicep. You must lift, Butler.
Yeah. This is really how and why free market economic systems work, you know, because individuals are in a better position to make decisions marginally for themselves than collective authorities are with regard to many millions of people. Whatever problem that might arise here at the farm, for example, you're in a better position to know what needs to be done in order to rectify that than would be some bureaucrats in the state capitol or back in Washington who would make some sort of a general rule that's going to be applicable to everybody and probably completely screw up your operation.
You know, there's just one sentence you had in here that brought this to mind. It says, it is not better ideas that are transforming how we organize with one another, but real-world pragmatism. The life system simply cannot operate on the principle of being directed by centralized authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, I think basically for that reason, you know, individual beings, whatever the species is, whether human beings or other mammals or fish, birds, whatever it is, have to be able to respond, to the conditions that are before them. And the conditions that are in front of you are going to be different from the conditions that are in front of me. And for me to try to make a generalized rule that's going to cover you and Mark and, you know, 100 million other people is going to be very destructive to most of you.
You know, here you're talking about the Middle East, and you said,
When millions of men and women can peacefully come together in the center of major cities to protest the legitimacy of their being ruled by others, one ought to ask whether we might be witnessing what the pyramidalist would most fear, an open expression of the decentralization of our common interest, not as citizens, but as human beings.
Yes. I think it was very interesting about that. And you always have to watch these things to see how the media picks up on it and plays it out for the benefit of the establishment. You know, the established order wants to have these events interpreted most conducively to their particular interests. But when, in the early days of this, people were just out there in the street. They weren't rioting. They weren't burning down buildings. They weren't doing all of these other things. They were just out there saying no. It was kind of like what happened on the eve of the war with Iraq. You know, you had people all over the world, in London, in Paris, and elsewhere, just standing in the streets saying
more
no.
People in the streets protesting a war we hadn't even started in
That's
Iraq
right.
yet than
yeah.
at the peak of the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. I remember reporting on that. I go, there's more people in the streets against a war we haven't even started than there had been for the Vietnam War.
Yeah. No.
So I'm going, this is, the sentiment was obvious. It's just that they have such hubris to think that they can control this. And they've been successful relatively, you know, for some years. Can it go on forever to keep this contained?
Well, I think I've had this feeling of, you know, for some time. In fact, I wrote an article for LouRockwell.com a few years ago on when people were talking about impeaching George Bush and all of this. And I said, you know, I think it's really time to start giving consideration to impeaching the American people. You know, why do most Americans put up with this? Why do we assume that because some politician wants to engage us in a war or do something else, we just, well, okay, all right.
Well, what do you think?
I think there's an element of intellectual and moral cowardice involved, and I think there's also the element of identity. People identify themselves so much with the state that to have an open criticism of the state basically involves a criticism of yourself, doesn't it, if you've identified with it?
Well, it's like our football team, you get to wear the jersey or something.
Yeah, or have to, yeah.
Well, what do you think is the mood of what segment of our demographic? Let's put it this way. Boomers retiring now are thinking what? Then you have, oh, Mark's here, happening. And, you know,
Sierra, and he's got an arrest warrant.
Go ahead and hook him up. You know, then you have the younger generation, and kind of in between there are kind of me, the middle age, you know, you're 35 to 60 around in there. That's kind of in between all this stuff. You know, we're still paying in, you know, at our peak earning power. We're probably, we know we're not going to get our value back out of it, but we're doing it anyway. Then you have the younger people, you know, generation next, and they're going, you know, we know we're not getting it, you know, and they're going to want more and more from us, more service to the state, more. No, we gave you the short chair on purpose. You can use that stool over there.
Yeah.
But so what do you think the mood that is required for there to be revolutionary change? I mean, you've studied this. I mean, where's it going to come from? Are grandpas going to be screaming like they are in Wisconsin, you got to keep giving me more of my state goodies? Or
well,
what?
Yeah, just started writing an article now about the basic theme of it's going to be, you know, when the parasites start feeding on each other. And that's kind of, you know, the host is kind of lost, you know, the host has been drained of all its tax money and other energies and so forth. Now you take a look at what's going on in Wisconsin. You've got the unions and the government officials and the governor and the state legislators all fighting each other. And I think that's great. You know, just sit back and let these you know, let these people go at it. It's kind of like the buzzards and the vultures have now become the roadkill. And
you know, I'm looking. A good example is here in Phoenix. Phoenix, the municipality, the municipal bonds, the retirement programs, the overexpending, you know, the extension of debt, the overspending of the city, it's all going to come crashing down. And we live in the desert. So yeah. I'm like, you know, man, you want to control the people, I just turn off the spigot, you know? So I'm wondering how this is going to play out. And when we come back, Butler Schaefer and Mark J. Victor, we're going to talk about what we're doing, what you can expect to happen, and how you just keep breathing in and out. we outlast the bad guys, then maybe they won't be in charge of us if they're just gone.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Boston! Boston! That means Mark J. Victor's in the house! We've got to have Boston when he's here, you know, or he complains on a regular basis. We have Butler Schaefer, which was Mark J. Victor's mentor and law professor at Southwestern University, right?
And tormentor, right?
And tormentor. You know, thank you. The he deserves it. The you know, the one thing that it's always good to have you guys together and we get to spend some time together, but the main thing I wanted to share with the audience was Butler Schaefer's predictions of, I remember when Mark had an event with Vince Aprinowitz, and Butler Schaefer spoke at one of your things in year 2000. It was before we actually started doing the Freedom Summit in 01. And I remember what Vin was saying, you know, the trend of freedom. And Butler was going on about, you know, hey, humanity trends this way. You know, it gets more and more decentralized. We can expect that over time. Vin was saying, yeah, but if you were, you know, a Polish Jew in the Warsaw Ghetto, you didn't feel it coming. You know, I mean, the trend wasn't going your way. So that's really where we're at now, is that in certain places, in certain pockets, for certain reasons, we're going to be in this situation to where we're going to suffer. We're going to suffer a great deal. And some people aren't. And I'm wondering, how are we going to make sure we don't, Butler? Help me out. You got family, you got grandkids and so on. Help me out here. What's the best way of not suffering?
Well, I think the best way, number one, is to be aware of what's going on around you rather than, you know, assuming that, you know, CNN and the New York Times and people like that are going to tell you what you need to know in order to overcome whatever they identify the problem as being. But you need to think outside the circle. But one of the most important books I remember reading years ago was The Art of Contrary Thinking. And it basically meant when you see the crowd going in one direction, it might be a good idea to consider going the other direction. And when you see the tsunami coming in toward you to bring it up to date, that's not the time to go running out into the ocean and take pictures. You know, you maybe head for high ground. But I think you have people just have to stop kidding themselves that somehow or other the system is really going to work. It's just really going to correct itself and so forth. It's not going to correct itself. And this is going on a worldwide basis. It's not just in the United States. In fact, I would say it's probably not even hit the United States yet as strongly as it has in some parts of the world.
You know, where they're rioting.
Yeah.
You know, there is some good news in there, Ernie, because, I mean, I think that it probably would be accurate to say that all the various problems that the government has put out there for us to deal with and to tackle, you know, all the things that they're fighting wars on, the war on this, the war. I mean, the reality is, the good news is, we don't really need to worry about any of that stuff. None of those things are real problems. I mean, those are problems that the government puts out there really to justify their existence and to convince people that we really need them to solve these problems that aren't really problems in the first place.
Yeah, nothing solidifies power as fear. You know, to be able to create fear objects around which people will now organize themselves with the state, you know, to protect them against these fear objects. But that's the one thing that's encouraging, and I've seen this in so many different places. I brought you a news item from back in Sedgwick, Maine, about a week ago, where you had these farmers' markets that the people in Sedgwick, Maine passed on one of these town hall meetings. It was passed unanimously. An ordinance that says that any food that is produced and sold within Sedgwick to residents of Sedgwick shall not be subject to any federal, state, or federal regulation. Now, the legality of that...
S-510, goodbye.
Yeah. The legality of that, someone said, well, that wouldn't be legal. You've got the Supremacy Clause of the Federal Constitution, the Commerce Clause, and so forth. But, you know, how valid is that in the face of an
starvation?
Well, or in the face of an overwhelming number of people in the community said, no, we're not going to play that game anymore.
You know what's interesting is that what'll come out of this is you'll have the local community in some, you know, Maine, of all places, way out away from something. And they say everything that we grow, we can sell to people here and not be subject to anything. Well, of course, this was the argument that the farmer did back in the day. And he's going, hey, man, I'm not in your interstate commerce. I'm growing wheat and corn or whatever for my own farm animals. And I don't have anything to do with them. Bite me. And what do they say?
Mm-hmm.
What's their argument? They come back with what?
Well, it was, you know, the cumulative effect argument. You know, if you can raise wheat on your own farm, you know, that's going to... have an impact on commerce. Well, so what?
Because you didn't buy it from somebody else.
Yeah.
Which is just, I mean, this is how they get away with this stuff.
You know what's so neat about this, Ernie? And this is something I don't know if you or your listeners can really, really appreciate. I wonder how many law school professors who teach the Commerce Clause for a living, who understand the ins and outs of the Wickard versus Filburn case, which is what you were just talking about, and the tremendous expansion of the Commerce Clause. And in essence, it probably wouldn't be inaccurate to say the way the Commerce Clause is interpreted today can pretty much reach anything. I mean, there's virtually nothing that is off limits for the federal government. I can remember not too long ago having a discussion with a federal prosecutor, an assistant United States attorney, because I used to come to the federal court thinking that there were limits about things that they could prosecute. And we got into this discussion and he said to me, you know, the way we see things, we could prosecute DUIs if we wanted to. And I said, really, why on earth do you think you could prosecute DUI? Well, easy. You know, they travel
interstate
commerce and they're made, you know, across state lines and all these other things. But to hear somebody like Professor Butler Schaefer sitting here talking about this really what I would say blatantly unconstitutional act that's passed up in Maine that in essence says, hey, all this Commerce Clause stuff that you've been doing all this time, forget all that stuff. We're just going to say, sorry, the federal government doesn't reach what we're doing here. We're sort of thumbing our nose at not just all of the Commerce Clause jurisprudence, but the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. And here's Butler Schaefer cheering it on. I think it's terrific. I wonder how many law school professors who teach the Commerce Clause would like what just happened in Maine.
You know, one of the points that they made it, as part of the ordinance, it says, it shall be unlawful for any law or regulation adopted by the state or federal government to interfere with the rights recognized by this ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going, okay, unlawful. What does that mean? The you know, somebody shows up with their shiny badge, will the local gendarmes arrest or cite the people? And that's where it has to go. That's
people have to remember that the Revolutionary War was an unlawful act. You know, it was an act against the established government, and the people who conducted the Revolutionary War decided, well, yeah, that's that's what we want to do. We want to get rid of these people. But you take a look at the Constitution. I get rather frustrated with people who, especially see this among Republicans. You know that, well, we've got to get back to the Constitution. Guess what? We never got away from it. We never got away from it. All there's music from the NSA.
We're going to find out what that means. You know, Butler Schaefer's talking about, you know, everything that we're doing is constitutional. You don't think so? Well, you stay right there. Butler Schaefer, a law professor, constitutional law professor, is going to explain it to you. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence from the Farm in just a little bit.
Radio Free Antarctica.
Live from the...
You know how lucky you are, boy. Back in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the USSR.
Yeah, you don't know how lucky you are. Yeah, we got... You caught me monologuing. Yeah, you know, the one thing I want to... I promised we'd get right back to it. I want to get back to it. Is constitutionality. You know, we have the Tea Party and people screaming, we got to get back to the Constitution. And a lot of us that have been studying this for a long time and living it, we tried that, you know. And what you find out as you go through court, you know, here we have a constitutional law professor, we have a criminal defense attorney, and you have a libertarian activist that I've been in over a dozen of my own lawsuits as my own attorney, suing the government every chance I get. And let me tell you what I know. Everything's constitutional. Who do you got to ask? Well, tell me about that, Butler. I mean, how does this work?
Well, you know, most people who are always talking about wanting to get back to the Constitution have never read it. Somehow or other, they think everything from the Declaration of Independence to the Ten Commandments to the Golden Rule to whatever sounds nice and gooey and everything else is somehow or other caught up in that. But if you read it, what you find is that the government was empowered to do such things as to tax and promote the general welfare. Now, right there, if that's all you gave me the power to do, say I'm going to be a governmental authority, and all I have is the power to promote the general welfare, what can't I do? And who's going to decide that? Well, how do we interpret what the general welfare is? Who's going to interpret that? I am.
You know, it's said another way, Ernie. These people say what we need to do is get back to the Constitution. What they really should be saying is what we need to do is get back to what I believe and want the Constitution to mean. And that's great. You know, if some of these people probably do a great job interpreting the Constitution, but they're not going to get to interpret the Constitution. You know, in a way, the Constitution's kind of like the Bible. You know, you can get what you want out of that book. If you want to, you know, get this conclusion, then you read this passage. If you want to get that conclusion, you read that passage. Things are in conflict. Words are just not that precise. They're representations for thoughts. And so, for example, something from my backyard, something I deal with all the time, is the Fourth Amendment. And everybody thinks the Fourth Amendment is so wonderful. Especially my clients, they think it's wonderful. The ones who actually walked away from their criminal prosecution, and in their case, it was wonderful. But at the end of the day, the only thing it protects you against is an unreasonable search and seizure. So said another way, when I talk to people about the Fourth Amendment, what you could look at it like this. What it means is the government can do anything it wants to you so long as they determine what they're doing to you is reasonable. That's your protection.
And then you can throw in that other provision of the Constitution that talks about the Necessary and Proper Clause. You know, Congress can also enact any legislation that will be necessary and proper for carrying into such powers as the General Welfare Clause. What can't you do? What is left out?
And then you could get creative in what you're doing. Like, for example, you've got this very, very well-protected right to speech. Absolutely, your right to speech is protected, and we're not going to affect your right to speech. However, you know, the time of your speech, the place of your speech, the manner of your speech, all of that is subject to easy regulation. So it's true you get to say whatever you want, but we're in charge of the microphone. We're in charge of the podium. We're in charge of when you get to say it, where you get to say it. You know, remember these free speech zones we were seeing a few years back with, you know, people back in cages? They get to say whatever they want as long as they're in the cage.
It's funny, but I many years ago, even before they started these free speech zones, I did an article for, this is when I was doing one for a chain of newspapers. And I said, I could envision the day when the government would undertake a program to promote free speech and freedom of religion and so forth. And everyone would be required to go down to this one building where you can stand inside that building and say whatever it is you want to say. And there'll be guards down there, well-armed guards to keep everybody else out because these other people could interfere with your freedom. And they're there to protect you and so forth. Well, that's what the free speech zones ended up being.
I don't know. I think you just described Facebook.
Yeah,
you
know, one,
yeah. You're protected to say as long as we get the control, and when it gets too hot, we turn it off. You know, and that's one thing that's of interest too is this concept of internet kill switches. I mean, where do you think that's going?
I don't know. There's a law professor back at Columbia University who had an article, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal or someplace recently, saying that what we really need to do, and apparently the technology is already there, is to have internet sources completely decentralized. You can just plug it into the outlet in your wall, and you become your own internet service provider.
You know, that was a thing. Hey, Nick. Come on, we got Uber computer IT guy here who can answer this very question. You know, go ahead and use Mark's microphone there. I remember there being, we had it up on Freedom's Phoenix. It couldn't have been more than 6 months ago. There was a gentleman that was advocating. He goes, I was part of the World Wide Web guys back in the late 80s, early 90s when this started. And there was a decision that was made that we could have gone down the road of each individual person's computer would have been its own node. You know, that we would have had, that was the on-ramp, that was the connection, that was the parallel peer-to-peer processing, doing, addressing, kind of whatever. And the internet would have been more like electricity. You just plugged in and it, you know, it flowed out and you put in and addressed to another node kind of thing. The decision was made to have these, you know, like the universities and so on, the nodes and that going on. He's saying we need to reinvent the internet. We need to do it again, not internet 2.0 by the government, but a totally different, and you would walk around with a cube or a wallet or a your, you know, iPhone 4 or whatever, and your droid, and that would be your pass on to the on-ramp. Explain to us what they meant.
Well, when the internet, you know, when the World Wide Web first got notoriety in the early, when the web got notoriety in the early 90s, it was piggybacking on the system that was already in place for the universities, which was running off of the old ARPANET technology, which was centralized military government control over the whole thing. So rather than all these little ISPs having to create their own thing, they just jacked into Uncle Sam, and you know, it was a lot cheaper to get it started that way. I wish they would have made different decisions, but that's how it is.
So can you use the, do we need a new system, a wireless system, a cell phone system, a satellite system? I mean, what, look 5-10 years in the future, what do you expect is going to happen?
I don't know.
What's capable
happen.
Of happening?
What's capable of happening is RF. I think RF would probably be the best bet, because satellites, you have to have giant equipment to communicate and there's delay.
What's RF, radio?
Radio frequency.
Yeah, see, this is what we're talking about with Butler. You know, his whole article is on the decentralization of society and just about every aspect and communication. To think that it's going to continually be under the control of the DOD is just, if not naive, stupid, you know?
I know there's a movement out there right now with people that are afraid of Internet 2.0 coming or the government just throwing a kill switch, and they're already using their own RF antennas and setting up local networks. So they have their own, it's kind of an intranet, but it would be like the whole town on its own intranet, and then you could use high powered antennas to connect different towns together and bypass the whole government.
See, Butler?
Yeah, see, well, look who the contrasting parties are. For, on the one hand, you've got the government, which has a lot of power and so forth, and a lot of stupidity, too. I mean, the governmental agencies at whatever level are not known for really being terribly creative, terribly imaginative, terribly entrepreneurial oriented. On the other hand, who is pushing all of this stuff that challenges that? You know, the geeks, the nerds, the creative people.
The Knicks.
Yeah. These are the people, the really creative people who will figure out ways to get around that. And somebody puts another barrier up, and they'll figure out a way to get around that. And they put another barrier up, you got to figure out a way to get around that.
You know, and the thing is, when we come back, I want to talk to Butler and Mark about this, is that Butler has been predicting this since Mark Victor was a young guy. You know, and but did
hey, wait
he
a
have
second, I'm still a young guy. Yeah.
Did he have some prior knowledge of something? I don't know.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Which now voices can be heard. Just wanna scream it louder and louder.
What the hell are we fighting for?
Yeah, what are we fighting for here on the clear? Independence of the Ernest Hancock, Butler Schaefer, Mark J. Victor, Nick Barnett, Sierra Hancock, and Mark Wasden, he who shall remain silent. You know, we'll let him play. You know, I just found out about a new website he has coming up. We're not allowed to say the name on the air. Yeah, he's pushing the edge, man. He's always, you know, Mike Wasden pushing the edge. You know, Wasden's claim to fame is he's, you know, been guest editor of Strike the Root. I mean, he's participated in that quite a bit. So there's a lot of anarchists here. I mean, heck, he's, I don't know, all his tattoos is all this anarchist thing going on, you know? So,
I have an article on Lou Rockwell.
And articles on Lou Rockwell regarding.
Enemy of the
state.
What's your
article, Lou Rockwell?
Enemy of the state.
Are you an enemy of the state?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Boy, I got the crowd in today. This is that. Oh, and Nick Barnett, man. He's. Oh, yeah. Don't you have a tattoo or something regarding that? Oh, he's got a voluntarist tattoo on his right wrist. That's right.
You know, another way to say enemy of the state is friend of freedom.
Yeah, like there's a difference. You know, an empire of lies, telling the truth is a treasonous act. And that's what we're at here. We're trying to tell the truth. We're being treasonous. You know, the enemies of the state. And I'm thinking about it. You got your WikiLeaks shirt on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you made the comment or raised the question earlier about, you know, who's really interested in a lot of this stuff. I can recall back to the 2008 presidential campaigns when everybody was still in on it. And you'd see pictures of at a Ron Paul rally, and or you'd attend something like that, and here are all these young kids, a lot of them not even old enough to vote, and you know, cheering him on. And then they would show a John McCain rally, and who's sitting at the John McCain rally? A bunch of old geezers with their USS Missouri baseball caps, you know.
And they're walkers.
Yeah, they're walkers. You know, ain't you like John? And so forth. And, you know, Jane and I were at a conference over in Las Vegas a few years ago. I spoke at a conference over there put on by people who teach free market economics in colleges and universities. There are about 400 people, I think, over there participating in that. 80% of them, at least, were under the age of 40. So the young kids are buying into this. We had breakfast yesterday morning in the restaurant we went into. I was wearing this WikiLeaks T-shirt, and the young
black
lady,
shirt with red WikiLeaks,
yeah,
and the planet on it.
Yeah, and some young woman, I don't think she's more than her early 20s, and so on. So, oh my goodness, yeah, I like that, and so forth. I can't imagine that any of the World War II era people would have been enthused over it.
You know, the reason I say, you know, it's so McCain was so representative of the older Americans that were in support of what, without understanding, it's more like a social thing for them. There was no intellectual discussion. There was no, it was us versus them, and I get the, you know, we're putting the band back together to support America, you
mm-hmm.
know? And we've had so many examples of the people striking back. And one I wanted to talk to you about, being a constitutional law professor, should they even be studying that? What should they call it if they don't call it
that? I don't
know.
I proposed at our law school that we stop teaching it. And the reason for it was that, you know, it doesn't mean anything anymore. The Constitution, the government does basically whatever it wants to do. I remember, Mark will remember Norm Carlin, with whom I team taught in law school a number of years ago. I used to really bug Carlin with the saying that the Constitution is what prevents the government from doing all the terrible things it does. And that's basically the way, you know, that's what it is. I like the line that Jay Leno had a couple years ago when
Iraq was doing it.
Yeah, yeah, and said, well, let's send them ours. You know, it served us well for a couple hundred years, and we're not using it anymore.
Well, one thing we got off the subject, what I wanted to ask you is that this judge in the United Kingdom that was arrested by 600 people.
London, yeah.
Well, what do you know about that?
Nothing other than what I saw on the internet. And this is the thing that's interesting. There's so much of this stuff that is coming down in a very decentralized way. It's not, you know, it's not that somebody is running it. I remember talking with Lou Rockwell a couple years ago, and other politicians were asking Ron Paul, well, who's doing all this stuff for you? Who came up with this, the Ron Paul balloon or blimp, I guess it was? Who's doing all these other things? And they said, nobody. I mean, this is just something that's risen out of the grassroots. No. I mean, who's really doing it? What company? Yeah, you know, what company has done all this stuff?
Well, already did.
There wasn't any. You know? And these characters just don't get it, and they don't get it with regard to WikiLeaks. Bradley, because they think that this is a trick that Bradley Manning and Julian Assange dreamed up. And if we can just put them away in the Tower of London someplace and keep them there, nothing like that will ever happen again. We'll be back to Edward R. Murrow and Eisenhower and the good old days. Well, this is just the start of things. It's the process. It's the potential that you have in what WikiLeaks represents. It's not the organization itself. It's the capacity that the internet has, that the free flow of information has, to be very disruptive, and there's nothing that the established order fears more than anything, more than just a disrupted public, people who are thinking.
This is one of the great reasons to get Butler Schaefer to come in once in a while, because the glass is always half full. I mean, Ernie, it would be so easy for you and I to sit here and recount all of the problems, all of the reasons to be so pessimistic about everything that's going on right now in our world. And, for years, since I graduated law school in 1994, every time I see Butler, I say, "Hey, Butler, you still optimistic? You still think things are going good?" He says, "Yeah, of course, things are going great." And he goes on for 15 minutes telling me about all the wonderful things going on. Butler's been optimistic since the day I met him. He thinks things are going great.
Yeah, in the short run, Ernie's quite right. In the short run, it's ugly. In the short run, you've got the police states that are running rampant, and the cops can basically do whatever they want to do, and nobody's going to blow the whistle on them and so forth. But people are starting to get a little fed up with it. And you mentioned the judge in London, who apparently, according to the news story that I read, was... people were concerned about him being corrupt or something like this. So 600 just ordinary people went down to the courthouse one day to arrest this guy. And the cops had to come in and protect the judge. And I still think that the cops and the judge themselves should be charged with resisting arrest. I think they should all spend time in prison the way the rest of us would if we resisted a cop, who was making an unlawful arrest.
I need to know more about it. But the premise was that in English law, there is a provision that allows, kind of like New Hampshire has the right to rebellion, mm-hmm. And this was, they were testing, said, "Look, man, if this isn't a good example of how bad, they can get and we're justified in doing what we did, we don't know what is." And what are they going to do? Take 600 people to trial and let's go play. Well, if we're lucky. And I think that's what they were hoping for, too.
One of the guys, I saw a photograph on the internet of one of the 600 was wearing a T-shirt that says, "I am not a slave of the state." Now, when you start seeing signs like that coming up in London,
this libertarian ideology is expanding rapidly, yeah. and a lot of us that have been, nose to grindstone on this for last couple of decades, and you several more than that, we are really not that surprised. I've kind of expected it. That's why we were so enthusiastic about the 08 election cycle and the evolution of that, because I felt from a lot of the experiences I've had with other people and you, and Mark's had a big influence on me, via you and this kind of, I was really convinced it was time. And when we did this Cairo Egyptian Arabic spreading the Levolution doing that, I was convinced it's time for that too, yeah. Which means the world is ready. The only thing, I guess I'm just going to have to hold off on my plans for Japan until they rebuild or something, because, they were on the list. it may be that there's an opportunity for them to make a change from being a zombie country. They may actually have to make some real hard decisions now and, go down the path to freedom.
I had something I wanted to say, but I'll save it for after the break. I got some optimism to throw on the fire. I'm not totally sure I agree with Butler on this point. It may not be ugly in the short term, so I've got some good news to bring to the table when we get back on the other side of the break.
Good news. We're always welcoming good news. Well, we'll be back here at the top of the hour after our top of the hour break and catch up on the news, and we might even get a cop block from Nick Barnett. Well, we'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence from the Farm in just a little bit.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Toured.